All right, on today's episode with Chandler Reed, we went through a huge variety of topics, talking about a seller carry, talking about the power of Twitter and how you can find partners and sellers on there, and ultimately talking about how to do an unconventional deal from a deal that has distress, has a single employee, and has no recurring revenue. So all the things people tend to shy away from. Casey, what were your summary takeaways?
Man, talk about getting an MBA and owning and running a business. I mean, taking down a distressed asset, the roller coaster ride. Holy cow, what a story, man.
Absolutely. So on this one, we talk about the highs and lows of being an entrepreneur. So definitely listen and check it out. Welcome to the M&A Launchpad podcast with your hosts, Casey and Ferris with Equity Launchpad. On this podcast, you will gain insights on acquiring, investing in, and selling profitable businesses in the lower to middle market. Whether you're a business owner, investor, or aspiring entrepreneur, at Equity Launchpad, we will provide you with the knowledge, guidance, and capital to navigate the world of mergers and acquisitions. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the M&A Launchpad podcast. Today, our guest is Chandler Reed. Chandler is the owner and CEO of Get Green NOI, a commercial green energy contractor that he acquired with his partner, Sam Rosati, in May of 2021. He's also the co-founder of SM Bootcamp, a leading educational platform in the small to medium business M&A industry. Chandler, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Chandler.
Guys, thanks for having me so much. I'm so pumped to be here.
Oh, glad to have you on. And, you know, we did a little bit of pre-meeting before this, and luckily Chandler's a pretty open book, candid guy, similar to us. So we're going to kind of do a deep dive on all sorts of topics.
And today, I'm excited to hear this story because it sounds pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so maybe to get this thing kicked off, right? You know, let's just go straight to the meat of it. Ultimately, distressed business, right? That's kind of, you know, maybe share a little bit about what you bought and, you know, what made you think to actually go for that of all things?
Because real quick before you jump in, that is not the traditional search model, right? Okay.
And really quick, actually, you know, for those that are listening, right? Chandler was a searcher, right? Which is someone essentially who raised money to go focus on finding a business to buy, right? And so that was kind of the MO and the model he was going down. Is that right, Chandler?
Well, that is almost right. I didn't know what searching was until I realized I was a searcher, I guess, when I had a business under LOI. So we can certainly talk about that more, too.
Let's jump in. Right.
Yeah. So I guess let's set the stage. So I went to school for finance in real estate, got a job out of school, worked in real estate, private equity. I thought that was my lifelong dream. That was my trajectory, going to climb the corporate ladder, maybe be a CIO one day. Who knows? But that was what I was dead set on. I maybe had some entrepreneurial aspirations, but I had no idea what shape it would take. I thought I was really just going to be maybe opening up my own private equity shop or development firm one day.
Yeah, cool.
So flashback, it is January of 2021. So as you guys know, we're still very much in the throes of COVID. I had been working from home for about a year. I started getting on Twitter and reading more about, you know, whether it was SMB Twit or Retweet, these people that were kind of more entrepreneurial and sharing their experiences on how they were doing kind of the stuff that I've been doing, but for themselves. I'm like, okay, that's pretty neat. And lo and behold, one day I see a tweet from my now business partner, Sam Rosati. Basically, the impetus of the tweet was, hey, I have a deal here in Tampa, Florida. I'm looking for someone to buy it with me and then run the company. And here are my three criteria. Need to know multifamily real estate pretty well. You need to have a little bit more hustle than capital, which I didn't know at the time, but that translates into this is a big turnaround. And then finally, you have to be either relocate to Tampa, Florida as soon as possible or already be here. So I kind of sit in there and I look at the tweet. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, was this like tweet directed right at me? I check all three of these boxes. So sure enough, you know, I ended up DMing him on both Twitter and LinkedIn. We hop on a 15-minute phone call, kind of figure out, you know, we both went to the University of Florida together. We're both from Tampa. We just didn't know each other. There's about an 8-year age gap between us, but, you know, we were probably 1 or 2 degrees separated from, you know, being best friends pretty much. We knew all the same people.
Very cool.
All that good stuff. So long story short, about 4 months later, we end up closing on the business together, but I'll kind of take you through that.
So really quick. So Sam, I guess he came across the business and he was looking for that person to come in and run it with him, or was it just even more of an idea even before he even had the business identified?
No. So what Sam had done, he was a self-funded searcher himself, bought two deals, literally was going on a search, did a search, found one business, bought it, and a month later, another one came across his desk, and he bought that one too. So he literally bought two deals within two separate deals. One was a patio screening company, and one was like a dumpster roll-off business within a month of each other. He also had his brother as a partner there. But yeah, some crazy stuff there. So he bought those. They did well with it, I guess, well enough, and sold them. And all of a sudden, you know, he's got a pile of cash laying around. And he, by trade, was an M&A lawyer and a CPA. So he kind of knew the space, but then started getting really more tapped into the SMB world. Now he's kind of an investor in at least in a dozen kind of small businesses, and also does buy-side M&A advisory. So awesome. I brought that up because he gets a certain amount of deal flow that just comes across his desk. People know that, hey, he might not be the guy for the job, but he can do something with it. So lo and behold, here comes this disgusting, no one would touch it with a 10-foot pole, passed on by multiple strategics, multifamily lighting contractor called Onyx Energy that comes across his desk, basically with a note from his broker saying, hey, just want to let you know, we have this deal. No one's touching it. You know anyone that can do anything with it? And then he goes and takes that on Twitter, which ends up getting on my timeline, and we end up connecting. And yeah, we ended up closing on the business together 4 months later.
Awesome. Right place, right place, right time for you, right? Because it definitely just sounds right up your alley. And I'm surprised Sam would that gutsy to think to find a partner like that, just tossing it out into the ether.
But you know, what's amazing is just the communication on a lot of these social media platforms. You know, we just hired a CEO to run the company that we acquired, and I connected with him on the Buy Then Build Facebook group. He posted a post saying, hey, anybody doing manufacturing industrial in Houston? And literally, you know, 2 days later, we're having coffee. And he's an ideal fit for what we're doing. It's just,
and it's gone well.
It's gone well so far. Yeah. So
So I guess, you know, walk us through the deal. So I guess once Sam found the potential day-to-day operator, right? You in this case.
Yeah.
Was it at that point in time that he then approached the seller and basically started to work out, you know, a deal and really dive in a little bit for those that don't know, what is multifamily lighting operator, right? What is the actual product? What is the company doing? And then how did that conversation go with the seller once you guys kind of found it, you were a match?
Yeah. So what we actually did was, so this company was founded in 2014, back when LED lights were kind of a new nascent technology. So they would come into institutional multifamily communities, think, you know, the 300 plus unit, whether it's a garden style, mid-rise, high-rise, et cetera, and come and retrofit all of the old halogen and the CFL lighting with this new efficient LED technology. One, it's brighter. Two, a lot of them are bulbless, so you don't have to do the kind of repair maintenance, switching out bulbs and stuff. It lets your maintenance and you let your maintenance team go focus on work orders. And then also, and the biggest kicker is that there's a huge energy savings associated with it. So it's almost like a no-brainer for these people.
Yeah,
so,
and actually, and I'll add one more too, because I have that multifamily background. During kind of 2000, maybe 10 to 2020, 21, there was a really popular thing in the agencies, right? Fannie and Freddie, where they had a green program where essentially if you agreed to do a certain amount of energy savings, you would actually get a better interest rate as well. So we did several deals like that. It was more for us, what we found the most bang for the buck was usually more so on water savings, but it definitely energy was a big part of that too. And we've done things on that same vein to get that better interest rate too.
Yeah, exactly. So actually we've done some deals like that in the past, but the differentiator there is like, with those loans, they would make you go make improvements to the interiors of the units, which, to be candid, and I'm sure you might know this as well, like typically if you're going to go retrofit your lights, you only care about what you're on the hook for on your energy bill wise. So that's for the common areas, the exterior, the amenity spaces, stuff like that. So basically this company would go in and retrofit all the lights that you could think of, primarily in the owner on the hook for energy saving or energy bill lights, but also in the green loan programs, you know, we'd come in and do units as well. But so we saw that business as it was. So what had happened was, why it was up for sale, the previous seller, who's kind of a serial multifamily entrepreneur vendor, he's kind of pioneered the valet trash business model back here in Tampa, which is really cool, which is now like, you know, he sold it for gobs of money. And then the private equity company that bought it turned it, I think it's now like Valet Living.
Valet Living. Exactly.
So Valet Living was the, I guess, successor company to the company that the guy I bought my business from founded, which is pretty cool. So he then was like, all right, what do I do? And he's like, oh, these LED technologies, pretty cool. Oh, there's a huge ROI. Oh, it's a no-brainer for these owners to do it. Let's go ahead and do that. So he kind of started it in 2014, 2015, built it up to doing about $7 million top line. And then about in 2018, he realized, oh, hey, this is a strictly project-based business. I want to get something back into the recurring model like the Valley Trash was. And so he started iApartments, which is basically a smart home installation and management platform. So, and he ended up raising, he's still crushing it with that, but raised Series A for it. Like, so he basically took his time, attention, and resources away from Onyx Energy, the lighting business, all towards iApartments. And even some cases, like took employees from Onyx Energy, stuck them on iApartments. So he's left with literally this one business that's still getting a ton of inbound leads because, you know, there's obviously lights at apartments. Those aren't going away anytime soon. With one employee, a project manager that's still with us today, kind of doing all the fulfillment side. There's no sort of outbound sales. And it's kind of dwindling, treating it as basically a lifestyle business that he can run some expenses through, you know, make a couple of $100K a year without really doing anything. But at the time, his investors in the smart home business were like, dude, you got to get rid of this. You're not focused 100% on the smart home business. You got to get rid of it. So he ends up listing it for sale. COVID hits. He listed it maybe one of the worst times possible. So obviously CapEx projects like kind of took a nosedive during that time frame too. No one was even going out in sites and stuff. So basically we were buying it not on its trailing 12, but on its potential of, hey, this could be a $7 million business again one day. And then an additional kicker on that was in my previous job, what I was working before doing this acquisition was for a full service developer here in Tampa that basically developed the first like well certified, LEED certified neighborhood with all the bells and whistles, ESG that you can think of. So I kind of saw where the market was trending. Every single major kind of institutional commercial real estate group is developing a sustainability department, investing a ton of dollars into these kind of energy efficiency and green energy projects. So I kind of saw it as one, hey, let's buy this lighting business. I know multifamily. We can get it back to its former glory. And then also as well, I know these people are going to be buying EV charging stations. I know they're going to be doing the low flow plumbing stuff. I know they're probably going to be doing solar eventually, and they're going to be buying it. And they're already, we already have a relationship with them. Why not service them in those aspects as well? So lo and behold, that was kind of our investment thesis.
So what is the cap, like go into the capital stack. So you guys, when you acquired the business, what were all the mechanisms when you bought it?
Yeah. So the mechanism was effectively, you know, if we would have brought this to an SBA lender, they would have said, what the hell is this? There's no way this is financeable. Yeah. I think like maybe there was on his last year of income taxes that we saw, there was maybe like 50K of net income on it. So he's like, oh, you're looking for a SBA loan of this much? This yeah. is more than the income. Whatever. But so anyways, the final capital stack ended up being we purchased it for, he wanted $1 million for it. Again, just banking on the potential that rebounding and coming back up with a little TLC from an operator. He wanted $1 million for it. We ended up negotiating it down to $625,000. 25% of that we put down in cash up front, which was a mixture between Sam and I, and then a third kind of more limited partner okay. that we ended up bringing in. And 75% of it was structured as a seller note, but nice. In the form of an earnout. So okay. it was
That's
basically
pretty awesome structure.
Yeah. Especially for a first time acquirer. And granted, like just to paint some more picture, I was 25 at the time. So I'm like, hey, I don't even know. All I've been doing is running Excel models my whole life, basically. I don't know how to run a business. So I'm like, all right, it's something I can get my hands around. And like, I know multifamily. Granted, I don't know shit about lights, but I can figure that out as we go. And then, hey, here's a really friendly deal structure for me to kind of keep my feet wet. I'm not servicing any debt, like a, you know, personally guaranteed debt, if you will, like SBA loan. So between all of that, you know, it was really just a good opportunity for me and I ended up pursuing it. But yeah, I could talk a little bit about the seller note too, because I wanted, the last thing I wanted was to buy this thing from a guy that is like literally one of the best maybe mentors you could potentially have in the multifamily vendor space and just pay him his cash and like, all right, he screws off and then is trying to install smart homes across
keep the country. Keep him in the deal, baby. That's it. Got to keep
exactly.
him in the deal.
So we wanted to keep him in the deal. So we ended up structuring it as an earnout. So basically it was a minimum per quarter. It was 25 $300K a quarter or 33% of gross profit, whichever number was higher. Because that also, hey, if we do really well, you're going to get paid back better. And so based on the minimums, I think it would have taken us maybe like 4.75 a year to pay off. And I'm kind of jumping forward here, but long story short, we ended up getting that paid off in August of 2023. So about halfway of what we were intending. So,
wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. You do this the hard way, right? So you basically, you know, one person business. So that's already big risk. You basically had it kind of downtrending. That's another risk. And seller kind of staying out, but at least the one thing you had kind of going for you was motivated seller, right? Motivated seller, you get the price, get the right. Cause, and that's what I tell people. I will buy any deal for any price point if I can get the right structure, right? I mean, you know, even your business, I'll pay $100 million for it if the person is going to amortize it over, you know, a million years and I'm paying, you know, a dollar a year, right? I mean, it works out. And so you're able to get the right capital structure to make the deal work. And that's always important for a thing.
Deal structure, everything. I mean, that made a big deal. The nice part is you avoided the personal guarantee. So you're going into the deal, you know, you now have free rein to really run hard without having to work out with a note or a lender or deal with SBA. Because it's a lot of work. Exactly. And plus you're dealing with 11% interest rates right around that time. So great structure.
And it was just purely an earnout, right? No interest rate, no kind of owner loan, anything like that.
Correct. Purely earnout.
Those deals are out there, but you had to work your butt off to get to the, to get it right.
Yeah. So, I mean, the running joke and the kind of, you know, ETA community is you never really want to buy yourself a job. And I bought myself 10 jobs. The deal structure was adequate for the business that I was inheriting.
Got it. And so then walk me through, how involved did the seller be afterwards, right? Was he actually valuable to have as advisor? Do you still talk to him, or is he kind of guys split ways and he's kind of doing his own thing now?
No, it was great. So at least until you know, we ended up paying him off. We were meeting at least once a quarter for dinner, drinks, or lunch. I'm bringing him my problems. Hey, I'm running into this. Did you see this? He's like, oh yeah, here's how I solved it. And then as well, because he's still in the multifamily business, right? Just granted a different kind of vendor vertical. So of all the people that, you know, and he's got a pretty recognizable name across, you know, multifamily management companies, multifamily investors, et cetera. So he would get emails sometimes from, hey, Dave, I'm looking to get this lighting project completed. Can you help me out with this? And he would just pass along for us. So, you know, he helped us out, win a bunch of deals, and would get us in the door with some people. And he was invaluable as far as also one, teaching me how to run a multifamily vendor business, but then also two, just kind of doors he was able to open for us.
So this brings up a great point, because you and I have talked about this, you know, in the multifamily space, right? You know, how many sellers have you met?
Very few.
All the multifamily you buy.
Right, it's all done through a broker. I mean, you very, very rarely. The most I meet is sellers whenever doing a buyer interview, and they're interviewing us to see if we can close the deal or not, right?
Yeah. So Chandler, how important is it in the process to get to know your seller?
Yeah, I would say critical. At least if you're going to do a turnaround type deal where you need a lot of help from the seller, like, you got to be on friendly terms.
See, a big requirement for us is we like to see the seller try to stay in for at least 2 years. That is one of the things, you know, we're looking at more of the silver tsunami conversation, right? We're looking after the retiring guys, buying them boring business, but there's so much knowledge they have that you're just not going to be able to download in 6 months where most of the brokers are like, hey, he'll stay on for 6 months. You're like, yeah, probably not.
Our recipe is pretty easy. It's the opposite of Chandler's, right? So we're looking for non-distress, looking for sellers that will stay in the business. At least he kind of had a little bit of that. We're looking for kind of not one person knows it all, and that is everything is tied to that person. But hey, I mean, like I tell people, you can make money a million different ways, and it's all about the wherewithal and the drive to kind of go do it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I would recommend.
What were some of the biggest setbacks in this your process from closing to running the business?
The biggest setbacks were, you know, I didn't know anything about the types of businesses that are more attractive for small business M&A. Like, if you ask me again, would I buy the same business? And again, probably not. But would I do what I did? Yeah. Again, 100%, because it's just opened so many doors for me. I've grown so much personally. not just business aside, like I'm a completely different person than I was, you know, almost 3 years ago when we acquired it. And then also like, I view this kind of as like a, you know, a real world MBA that I was getting paid to do with the call option of maybe selling it one day and making a ton of money. So I was like, all right, sweet, let's do that. But I would say some of the biggest setbacks were one, like buying a business that was so cyclically tied to kind of transactions, or at least just a very cyclical business. And especially, it's okay to buy a cyclical business, but if there's no recurring aspects to it, like you better make sure that, you know, when that cycle goes down, you have some cash in runway to support yourself until it starts picking back up again. So that was probably the biggest thing. And then also just trying to like get respect from some of these hard-nosed, like blue-collar construction managers that I was selling to, when all of a sudden, you know, some snot-nosed 25-year-old kid who doesn't know anything really what he's talking about, is just trying to fake it till he makes it, is trying to sell him products and stuff. And then also I would say, just with the one employee that did transition, you know, he's got me by about 8 years, and all of a sudden some kid is now his boss that, you know, in an industry that he'd been working in his whole life, and he knows like the back of his hand. And I'm coming in here like, hey man, how do we, where's the bathroom at again? Like some low level stuff. So just trying to manage all of this. And, you know, at the same time, just, you know, trying to have a personal life as well. So it was a whirlwind, but it was something I wouldn't trade.
Oh, absolutely. Experience, you know, takes you to the path that you're on now. And so question. So obviously one of the big risks of the business is that it's project-based. Right. You knew that kind of going in. Have you been able to think of any creative strategies to actually shift it more towards kind of an NRR model an ARR model where you do have some sort of recurring piece of that? Right. And I know some companies will do it, but I mean, in LED, it's a little bit harder. It's like, what do you do? Replace the bulb that never burns out, you know, on the schedule.
So, and another nuance to our business too, is we sub out all of our labor. So it's ideal for project-based. Yeah. So it's ideal for a project-based business. Right. So we typically go on site, put together the scope, take pictures of the lights, takes counts. And then we can bid that out to basically a handful of the regional kind of subcontractors that we have. They come in, knock out the project, wash their hands, we'll move on to the next one. If we wanted to do some sort of like programmatic, like lighting repair and maintenance type program where, hey, we're going to install these lights, then you pay us $100 a year, or whatever the math would come out to be. And hey, if a light goes out, we'll be out there tomorrow to replace it. If we had our own in-house labor and we maybe only did it in like a really tight market, we could do recurring revenue that way. But we worked nationwide. We did a project in 2021 in suburban Seattle, knocked out one last year in Manhattan, and pretty much all across the Southeast. We're doing projects in Texas right now. We've done them in Houston. So it's really hard for us to implement that model. It would have to be like getting our subcontractors on the hook for that, which they probably wouldn't be too happy for it. And it wouldn't make financial sense for us to do that. But one of the most exciting avenues that we think that we can start clipping some of that is with the EV charging stations. And granted, we weren't in a position to do it, number one, because most of our free cash flow is going to pay back the seller, which is the blessing and the curse of the earnout. It's like, yeah, we're doing great. We're paying it back. Like, oh, that's a lot of money going out the door. Damn, I really wish I could have this to hire someone else.
We've got so one of those.
We know. Yeah, exactly. So what we're trying to do now is between, you know, our partner's balance sheet and then also working with some third-party lenders of doing a kind of like shared investment in these EV charging stations or just basically leasing the stations from us. Like, hey, we'll come in, we'll install the EVs, all the electrical infrastructure, and then you pay us, you know, basically we'll split the revenue with you and then we'll pay you, you know, whatever the spaces EV charging stations are taking up, you know, we'll pay you like $50 a month, like renting your spaces, if you will. And then we collect 100% of the revenue and then you pay us back over time for the stations.
No, and it works. So we've done that and we're doing that on a few properties. Usually there's a rev share. So I would actually keep the rev share piece, right? So you can get suckers like me to agree to pay for some of it or all of it. Right. And we get a rev share piece because I know I can spend that $10,000 to do the install, but I'm getting back, you know, just to make up a number, $3,000 a year off the rev share, right? Well, obviously you get a piece of that, we get a piece of that, but it's a longer term thing. So I think it's a good model and I think that makes sense.
But Chandler, tell me this. So is that like, were you guys just in Florida or did you guys have the idea to expand nationally?
No, they were a nationwide company. Yeah. So they were doing projects all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like the roofing business, right, Chandler? So the roofing business, right, very few guys have all of the labor on hand because you have to insure that labor. You know, it's hard to find that labor, et cetera. So instead, you get really, really good at marketing and kind of the, you know, the putting together the bids, the price, you know, understanding your pricing and marketing. You can go national, and then you have other guys that are going to do the back end of it. And that's exactly the roofing business. It's that exact model, for better or for worse, right? And so
So that's basically our model as well.
So it gives you national scale pretty quickly. And then on top of that, you're not having to worry about, well, if a guy falls off the roof, what happens, right? Who's liable for that? And so that's got its own set of problems.
So when was that moment when you were like, okay, we have arrived, you know, we're here. And I know it's hard to say, like, all entrepreneurs were like, oh, I can do better, I can do more. But there had to be a moment where you were like, man, I think we've pulled this off to a point where we're off to the races.
Yeah. So the point where I think we really pulled it off is when we were able to drum up enough money to also not only pay off the earnout, but also make our first hire outside of myself, obviously. And then the guy that transitioned with us, that was like, and I'd never hired anyone before.
So it stayed just you two essentially until you guys paid off that guy?
No. So this is kind of the roller coaster story. I think we were talking about this offline, but so we get a ton of I would say probably at least 33% of our revenue comes from value add transactions. You know, one of the big things, big ticket items that they want to do when groups buy a value add property is freshen up the lights. You know, even if they're already LED, like a lot of times there's bugs in it, the lenses are cracked and yellowed, and you can't raise rents if your potential tenants are walking around and the lights look like crap. So we got a ton of business from those transactions. And then, you know, as we alluded to earlier, September 2022, interest rates spiked, I think, faster than they have ever. And multifamily transactions, especially value add ones, after literally like a historic rip from post-COVID until Q3 of 2022, just grinded to a halt. So at that time, we had made four hires. We had made three hires in person, two project managers / engineers that were helping with the fulfillment side, and then one inside sales rep to help out with our kind of inbound leads, which freed me up to go try to get some more new clients into the door. And then we hired a couple of VAs as well. And then lo and behold, you know, I guess to paint a picture on what that run up was like in year one. So from May 2021 until December 2021, we did 900K top line, which basically annualize it. I think it's like $1.1 million. 2022, because of how hot the market was, we clipped $3 million top line. So I'm sitting here.
2022 is a good year for multifamily.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm sitting here thinking, number one, I thought I was a genius, right? I was like, oh my gosh, we were able to go from 900K to $3 million. Oh my gosh,
huge.
Genius. Knowing like,
Chandler's like, where's my next business? I'm going to go find distressed deals. Yeah.
Like, let's go.
I'm like, oh, this is so easy. Oh my gosh. And then lo and behold, and then we scaled our overhead, right, to match that growth rate. And then hoping to even, you know, make another growth like that in 2023. And then lo and behold, you know, interest rate spike. We didn't. In hindsight, we probably should have acted quicker, but we just, you know, we're new business owners, or at least in this industry. And so come March of 2023, after doing $3 million in top line the year before, we're in mid-March and we've only signed $10,000 worth of contracts for that year. So I had a big, oh shit moment of what are we going to do? And we're project-based, right? So if we're not doing projects, there's no money coming in the door. So we basically, you know, looked at our whole cash flow forecast and, you know, realized we had to make some changes. We had to make some changes fast. So we ended up having to let go all the people that we had hired last year, minus one of the VAs. So as it sits today, it is still me, the one guy that transitioned with us, and then one virtual assistant kind of running the show. But in that time, we've paid off the seller note, and the market is not fully where it was. I don't think it may not even get back to where it was in that time frame when interest rates were basically zero, but it's certainly stabilized more. And we're thinking some more transactions will come. But we have some job postings out now, which is fun, which I haven't, you know, been able to do that for at least a year.
Talk about an MBA right there. That is MBA all right there. You know, it's that moment where you're sitting there and you're looking and you're going, because I have a similar story, not going to get into it, but it's like when you're like, oh my God, where did it go? Like, what happened? And it's out of your control because it was interest rates, it's market, it's whatever it is, it's out of your control. Nothing else you could do, and it just takes you. And I always say, man, you could crawl up in a ball, cry, do whatever you can do. And you get that moment. You know, I had my moment. I took 15 minutes and punched the punching bag and did all my stuff. Yeah.
That's where I found Casey. He crawled up in the corner.
Yeah. But then you step up and be a businessman. You got to be an entrepreneur. You know, you got to go at it. So
exactly.
What was your moment? How did you feel that way? What did you do?
Well, so the real shitty thing was, is when we came to that conclusion, I was literally, well, I guess, what I was doing was fun, but I was on it. I was on one of my buddy's bachelor parties, and we were skiing up in Whitefish, Montana. And I literally, you know, I'm talking with our accountant. We're sitting there. I'm talking with Sam and Bert, the two partners. And we come to the conclusion, like, hey, we got to let everyone go. And one of the sales girl that we had hired, she was on vacation, I think, at that point. So I had to call her that day because I wasn't going to be able to tell her in person by the time she got back. I had to call her and literally tell her over the phone, hey, here's what's happening. We have to let you go. Whole nine yards. It was super sad. And then fast forward a week, I'm getting back. I had a conference in the middle of it. I'm getting back. I spoke at my step-grandfather's funeral on a Saturday. And then Monday, I have to go and fire the other two people in person. Which I hadn't had to do. So yeah. So my moment there was, you know, I took a couple of days of just like sulking and sitting there, like, you know, kind of woe is me, the world is ending, all this stuff. but then finally, once I was able to kind of pull myself up by my bootstraps a little bit, I was like, all right, here's the situation. Here's what happened. Can't do anything about it now. How are we going to get out of this? And I literally tried to double down my sales efforts, everything that I had been doing. I just tried doing two times more, trying to get creative, you name it. I was trying to do it. And then luckily, I don't know if this is the business gods rewarding some tough decisions for us, but literally April, probably a couple of weeks after. And I think a lot of it too was clients had kind of recognized, oh, hey, this is probably 6 months or so after the interest rates had spiked. They were sitting there like, oh, hey, this is kind of the new normal we're going to be operating in. Let's go ahead and start spending some money again because, you know, this isn't going anywhere anytime soon and we still want to make these projects. So April of 2023 was ironically our best month to date as far as signing contracts. So whether you want to call that the business gods, like trying to reward you, but for making tough decisions.
That's the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur. Again, it comes to the good and the bad and you have to make those tough decisions, right? And I think too many people, myself included, probably makes the tough decision too slowly. Right. And you end up paying that price. You wait an extra month or two or three, but it costs you a year or two to unwind what you should have done sooner.
You know, there's a lot of there's a lot of business gurus out there and people talking about, you know, buying a business, they don't really say how easy it is, but the context of it seems to be like, hey, you know, this path is the right path. You buy a company, it's just going to be smooth. There's a lot of that in the text, in the content. You know what I'm talking about? But, you know, when you hear something like this, and for the listeners that are listening in, and it takes a lot of work. There is no free lunch here, right? It takes everything out of you, the ups, the downs, and you've got to enjoy that in a sense. Not that it's fun, but you've got to be able to push through. Otherwise, you shouldn't be in this industry.
Yeah, well, the strong survive.
Yeah. It's kind of like the destination is the journey. Your end goal, it's all about just the process of getting there, the ups and downs. That's what you sign up for when you do this.
Absolutely.
So one last question. So let's, before we dive into some of our flash stuff, talk a little bit about your boot camp. It's pretty cool what you have. Just spend a moment, tell us about it, how it came up and what you guys do.
Yeah. So it's funny because I did a transaction and not knowing that there's this whole space of people or searchers or, you know, lower middle market private equity that are buying some of these deals now too, of these people that just did it for a living. Like it was a thing. I didn't know there was any books on it. I didn't know there's any podcasts on it. I just thought, you know, hey, people started businesses. I didn't know people bought them. So I kind of bought it. I kind of went into it ass backwards. Most people learn about searching, go search, buy a business, and then operate it. Whereas I bought a business and then kind of stumbled into it. And Sam was a big door into that.
That's a little my story too. Yeah. I read the book after.
Exactly. Yeah. So I kind of stumbled into it backwards. And then ironically, it didn't really sink in that there was actually a full like community of people that did this. And not only just like any other community, like a community of people that I loved hanging out with. It was like one of the first ones that wasn't like a zero sum game of just like people trying to grow the pie. Like there's something out there for everyone. And I kind of really like fell in love with the space, but it wasn't until SM Bash 2022, which was February in Orlando, Florida, of 100 people that did this stuff for a living, you know, hold co-owners, searchers, people that have searched and bought multiple deals. Just like, holy crap, like, I love this. So I kind of fell into it backwards. And then kind of as we were pretty slow in summer of 2023, you know, Sam, my partner, had been running these in-person live boot camps for the past 2 years, which had started from after he sold his two deals that he searched and bought, of just literally like people asking him, hey, how'd you do this? And inviting him into his office, and they would get box lunch and they would just whiteboard out of like, hey, here's what I did. Here's who talk to when this happens, et cetera. All the way to now, which is like a full, like not institutional, you know, it's not like a college class, but it's like a full legitimate curriculum. We have a full deal team to help out searchers who find deals to come and close them. And so I thought it was really cool. I was like, Sam, like, you know, what's your end goal for this? He's like, I don't really know, man. I'm like, have you ever thought about, you know, bringing it online or trying to grow it or do more of them in some capacity? He's like, yeah, but I'm just not really sure how I can do that. Well, I'm like, okay, well, I know online stuff pretty well. And I know some people that kind of do stuff similar to this, granted in different spaces. So how about we partner up on this and I can help you out with a bootcamp? And since then, I think I formally started helping him out earlier or in about May or the summer of 2023. And I think each bootcamp since then has just gotten bigger and better. It's gotten more valuable. We've brought in better deal team members, better tools for searchers to come through and kind of really honed in our playbook on how to make this happen.
So how big is the class or, you know, each round and how long does it go for? Is it like a 2 month period and you have kind of a round of people or what exactly is it? Is it only in Tampa or is it all virtual?
Yeah. So what we'd had been doing until our first digital one is launching later this month, but the live ones has been 3 days here in Tampa, 3 days of kind of like full, you know, 8 hour classroom sessions, drinking from a fire hose of not only like content, like the block and tackling, how to set up your search, how to go search, best tips and tricks, working with owners, working with business brokers. And then also once you get that LOI signed, then running your due diligence process. So we bring in all the deal team members to that.
Huge value.
And then the last day is kind of case study. So it's really cool now. Like I used to be one of the people that would go and do the case studies, but like my story isn't really repeatable. So we're like, hey, let's probably get away from that. you know, it's cool. It's cool and fun to talk about, but it's not like anyone's going to like have a stroke of luck like I did. So it's really, what's really cool now is we're having alumni who have closed on businesses come back and speak and talk about, hey, here's what it was like when I went through the boot camp. Here's what it was like during my search. Here's what my close was like. Here's what I'm, you know, now that I'm operating, here's what it's looking like. So it's been really freaking cool. And then we wanted to bring it online. Yeah. We wanted to bring it online, not because of any other reason, because not everyone can get to Tampa for 3 days in the middle of the week or take off the time, or maybe they're in San Francisco or Pacific Northwest or wherever. They just can't get to Tampa, but we wanted to help spread the good word. So we literally just pretty much recorded most of the content that we talk about in there. And then also it's over the 6 weeks. It's going to be a 6 week cohort of 2 calls a week with not only Sam and I, but each one of the deal team members that I talked about. They come in, give their spiel, how to use them, and then also things to avoid and best tips and tricks and practices, and then Q&A sessions. So that's over a 6 week period. And another really cool thing with that too, is we've started a kind of Slack community of everyone that's come through a bootcamp, whether it's live or now going to be digital and live. And it's like, I think we have about 120 people in it right now. And it's been incredible, just the engagement in there. Every morning I wake up and I have like 90 unread Slack messages of like, hey, who's looking at these types of deals? Hey, have you ever structured an LOI like this? Or hey, what happens when a business broker is telling you this? And you just get like 10 nuanced answers from people that are either, you know, just started searching, or from Sam and I, or from the deal team, or people who are under LOI, or even people now still stay active after they've closed on a deal, just because they want to help out and kind of pass it forward. So
gotta be
really awesome, cool. Man. It's about building a community and adding value. How many people were you guys getting at the in-person one on the tail end of that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I forgot to bring that up. So we cap it at 25 people. We try to keep it at 20.
That's pretty good. Get 25 people come out for 3 days. That's awesome. No, like, and it, that's my thing I love about, you know, my background's tech, and the things I love about this space is people's number systems, right? So if you're comfortable with all three of those things, typically you kind of tend to do well.
Exactly. So we've kind of, you know, we've had the benefit of doing these for 2 years now, and we're trying to translate. Obviously with online, you have the ability to scale it more, but we're trying to cap that number because after a certain like critical mass or so, it just gets like less intimate. You don't build relationships with the cohort of the people that you're with. And, you know, you can't get your questions answered. You know, if you hop on a Zoom call and there's 150 people trying to all get their questions answered, and you have an hour, 30 minutes, you might not even get to half the group. So what we're trying to do is kind of like the anti-guru method of like, hey, let's just market it and get as jam as many people in here as possible. We want to keep it intimate and valuable as possible. And that's, you know, what I think we've been building.
And one of the things I'll say to the listeners, you know, I buy all types of programs. I mean, I think that's one of my things. I buy books, I buy audios, I get on online. I mean, I'm constantly learning, no matter how many transactions we do, no matter how many things we do, it's like constant learning. So
if you're not learning, you're kind of dying. So
I kind of encourage anybody that's listening to this and you're thinking about it, do not hesitate, right? I mean, you pay how much money you pay to go to college. I mean, we all pay a lot of money to go to college. And what do you really learn, right? Yeah. I mean, I can do like a 45-second keg stand. Like, I mean, those are some.
I was about to say, you learn how to shotgun a beer.
Yeah. But I made some great relationships. But at the end of the day, everything I've learned is by doing. And, you know, you got to have the education, but you also have to have that gust to get off the couch and go do it, right? So encourage those people to listen, get on those trainings and really dive into that stuff. It's important.
Yeah. So that was our thing. It's like, you know, like I said, but we've been doing them in Tampa. There's nothing wrong with doing them in Tampa, but not everyone can get down here and they want to learn and they want to learn from us. So it's like, all right, we got to have something for everyone here.
Well, we got to go to this awesome Elson Bash that's going to happen.
No, we'll definitely reach out. Yeah. Like a great we'll put that in the show notes for the listeners too. So happy to kind of help promote that.
Awesome. Exactly.
Well, no. So then I guess with that said, we wanted to move on to our rocket round, which is something we do for every guest, right? Where basically have three of the same questions. So I think first one we wanted to ask is, what do you like to do in your free time?
Free time, it is 100% golf. I played sports. Yeah. I played sports growing up all through high school. I still play, like, you know, my church's softball league. But there's really nothing that kind of like is scratching my competitive itch these days as much as golf is. I'm not fantastic. Like, my handicap's a 20. I'm getting there, but
I'm the world's worst real estate guy because I know nothing about golf. I don't even know what a handicap of 20 means. I've the closest I've done is I've gone to Topgolf a few times. I've been to a driving range for once.
But you know, I mean, golf is one of those sports, man. My daughter, you know, she's a competitive golfer, and we're out there every weekend. And it's powerful for the human mind. It's powerful for all of the things that you do besides the handicap, right?
Yeah.
I'm a plus. I'm a 20. Sometimes I'm a 26. I mean, but I enjoy going out and playing and socializing. And it's a hell of a game.
It's like we said, it's all about your partner. So if he's a 26, then that makes me a 26. So
I said 20
to 26. Sorry. 26. Is bigger better or worse? I don't even know. So
I will say the best round of golf I ever played is when I had a caddy.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
It was a game changer. I shot in the 80s. I was like, good. I was like, oh my God, I can do this. And then I went out by myself and I'm like, what happened?
Exactly. They're critical.
Awesome. All right. Let's see. Next question. What has been your most memorable business moment?
I think it's probably the moment when the wire cleared for our first transaction. That was like, oh shit, I'm in the thick of it now.
The real wire leaves your money, leaves your account, right?
Yeah. When the wire left my account and we got the notification from our lawyers that everything was tucked and tied. And then literally not 30 minutes after the wire came through, I called my boss and I put in my 2 weeks notice after. I was waiting to put my notice in until the transaction cleared and settled. Awesome. So that was something that sticks for me. I think it will stick with me forever.
I still remember that first big wire, you know, first time I did a seven figure wire out, and, you know, I feel like I screenshotted that thing. It was just, you know, definitely a feeling at the time. So, all right. And last but not least, favorite business tool or resource?
It is without a doubt Twitter, or I guess it's now X, but I cannot tell you how powerful this platform has been in changing my life, both personally and then business and professionally, from finding my business that I acquired on it to picking up some of the most valuable insights that in it. The best part is it's all free. You just have to follow people.
All right. Well, so then after the show, you're going to have to send us your favorite list of people to follow. And that way, you know, please. I feel like me and Casey are not invested enough in, you know, in Twitter or X. Yeah. And it sounds like that's the place to be.
I promise you guys, there's nothing more. I spend so much time on it. It's because I get like actual ROI. You think like, oh, you're doing social media, you're just doom scrolling, you know, you're just wasting your time. No, there's something. I learn something from Twitter every single day. The people that you connect with on there, the valuable insights that you can learn on there, take it and execute it in your own business. I've won probably 150K worth of contracts from business owners that I've met on Twitter. So there's a actual dollar amount ROI associated with it. Like I will die on that hill that X is the most powerful business platform out there.
Awesome, man. Well, Chandler, thank you very much. Before we wrap up, how can our kind of listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah. So probably first and foremost, I'm most active on going back to it, Twitter, or it's X now. My @ on there is Chandler Reed SMB. I try to be active on LinkedIn as well. Just look me up, Chandler Reed, shoot me a connection. I'm happy to connect with you. That's pretty much the two best places I would say.
All right.
Yeah. Very powerful, man. Not only are you out there buying companies, making things happen, but you're also giving back by helping entrepreneurs, which is all we can do for this community.
Yeah, we're big on that. I mean, like I said, I think
community is important.
We're big on building community and marketing and kind of helping just others grow. Right. I think Zig Ziglar said it. If you give everyone what they want, you can get whatever you want kind of thing. So
that's it.
Very much a lot of truth to that.
Exactly.
All right. So perfect. Well, Chandler, thank you very much. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. And I wish you guys nothing but success on this podcast. I know it's going to be big. You guys are killers. You guys are going to make it happen.
All right. Thanks a lot.
I appreciate it, buddy.
Take care.
Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to the M&A Launchpad podcast. If you've enjoyed today's podcast and would like to support us, please leave us a rating and a review after you listen. If you're looking for guidance on your next business acquisition or sale, capital to support your next business transaction, or to invest in a private equity opportunity, visit equitylaunchpad.com to learn more and to connect with our team. If you know of an individual who would be a great guest for the show, head over to equitylaunchpad.com/nominate, where you'll have the chance to refer yourself or someone else to be a guest on our show. I'm Casey Minshew, and I look forward to talking with you next week.